The Red Eye Radio Podcast is a service of Freightliner and Detroit.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
Hello and welcome. He's Gary McNamara. I'm Eric Harley. As we move into a Tuesday, Gary, good morning.
How are you? I'm just trying to figure stuff out here.
Let
me see.
What a weekend.
Let me see. We've got seen what the giveaway is here from the Democrats now. We have, we've
health care for all babies.
Health care. Well, no, not. health care for everybody.
Uh-huh.
Health care for everyone, universal basic income,
mm-hmm.
The baby bonds,
mm-hmm.
Free college, and now Elizabeth Warren, new one over the weekend, a $70 per billion dollar per year plan for universal free child care.
Yes, there we go.
And
all right.
She'll get it from the wealth tax.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Yeah, okay.
We're just universal free.
By the way, that doesn't mean universal. For those parents that are out there working, maybe one of the parents has two or even three jobs and the other one's working a job, you're making too much money.
Right. You'd be making too much money. Right.
Yeah.
Right. If you do, this is where the country is going. If you do the right thing and you save,
mm-hmm.
you can almost guarantee you will be the ones that will be punished.
But remember, it's for the children.
Yes. As long as it's for the children of the parents who are not responsible.
Mm-hmm.
That's where we live now.
That's right.
We've got a good show. Oh, by the way, Biden is ready for the nomination, has almost clinched it over the weekend.
Yeah.
When he was in Europe and said America is embarrassing, he's embarrassed by America.
Yeah.
Well, that's the other thing. How much free stuff can we give you? That's what it should be. This is what their slogan should be, whoever gets a nomination. How much free stuff can we get you from this country that sucks?
Right. Yeah, we're such a great, wealthy country that we're going to provide everything for you, but we really suck.
The Democrats' motto. People are furious about it, and I had to jump in. I can't believe, he said, have you been paying attention to the Democrats? I mean, look, I love it when people are still, how can anybody be shocked by anything anymore?
Well, the first thing when he became vice president, the first thing that his boss did was went around the world saying, I'm sorry.
Right.
Why would this shock anyone? This is right out of the old Obama playbook. Mm-hmm. Now, the problem is the new liberals have other reasons for him to apologize here at home. So when he gets home, he's going to have to apologize to them.
I did read
the apology tour all over again.
I did read a headline over the weekend. I just can't remember where it came from. But mm-hmm. but the headline, because I was scanning. I was on a plane, delayed in an airport for a while. I mean, so I was scanning everything this weekend. But it said, how can a white man run for president in the Democrat Party? And then a couple of dots, it said, very carefully.
Well, yeah, I mean, I remember when they, who was it? Was it Hillary's running mate that said all lives matter, then had to come out and he had to do an apology tour after saying that? Who was it that said it on stage and got booed off the stage and then had to apologize for saying it?
I don't know.
All lives matter.
There were many.
Yeah. And it was...
Remember when Bernie Sanders had to give up his podium?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. That entire summer, it was her running mate. What's his name? And he had to apologize for saying all lives matter.
Oh, just another thought flying through my head. So did Martina Navratilova's liberal card get pulled this weekend?
Oh, maybe.
I just wonder because, again, she doubled down on the fact that allowing transgendered women in to women's sports is cheating. I remember when she first came out with that, I believe it was in December or January, mm-hmm. when she first came out on it, she was blasted. Mm-hmm. You don't understand what you're talking about. And then she backed off, as everybody does.
Mm-hmm.
Well, okay, I guess I'll do some studying on it. And she came back full force and said, nope, sorry, it's cheating.
It's cheating. Yep.
So let me see. You've got the women feminist now,
mm-hmm.
the feminist women, the liberal
mm-hmm.
feminist women
mm-hmm.
that, was it Heritage Foundation thing that they were
yes.
panel
yes.
that they were
right.
At where, you know, they were talking about again the transgender movement and how it would affect women's rights.
Mm-hmm.
And so who are they coming to? Conservatives. They're moving towards the conservative libertarian. Mm-hmm. And by the way, we've said this for a very, very long time. If your one issue was ever, you know, gay rights or even civil rights, the only place that you can move towards is being more libertarian.
Yes.
Is less government right, involvement, right, right, just right. saying government should stay out of it completely.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Because yeah. you see what happens. It is the left now that wishes to run everything to the point of, like we said, the absolute liberal insanity. That I don't know why anybody feels shamed. You should be shamed. You're transphobic. Well, phobic connotates that I'm scared.
Yes.
I'm not scared of anybody on the left.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody on the left am I scared of. I am not frightened by any liberal mindset or ideology. I'll just tell you when you're full of it and you're lying and you're wrong mm-hmm. scientifically.
Mm-hmm.
A phobic has nothing to do with it.
No. No.
No. And so, you know, that's, again, I just love how, you know, she was initially, you know, okay, I'll have to think about it. And then she came back strong and said, nope, sorry, it's cheating. All right, who on the left or in the LGBTQ community wishes to now debate Martina Navratilova.
But that's
if you're
those are, but see what's,
if you're looking for somebody who is a woman
mm-hmm.
lesbian
mm-hmm.
who in sports led that charge. Martina Navratilova.
Mm-hmm.
And now what? She will now be marginalized and dismissed by the left.
This is the table that's being set for 2020 for the left. Because it goes back to that question, you know, how does, and I'll add old, how does an old white dude run for president in 2020 as a Democrat? Because the only way that a Biden can get away with it is to do what Hillary did. Remember, they built a wall around her and made Fox News pay for it. Remember the young liberal reporters that were going up to her and asking her questions about her husband? All of a sudden, the DNC cuts her off. She has little access, or the media has little access to her. It's the only way they can do it in 2020 with Biden. He's going to speak in these big, grand generalities that you know, and, you know, well, the rich need to be paying their fair share and never get too specific. If he runs, that's his only game.
Let me ask you this. Does he wait until fall? Does he wait till October to get in until they've already gone through?
I think so.
Three or four. I don't know exactly what the schedule is, but I know they have a debate or town hall, whatever you want to call it, a get together for. Mm-hmm. I don't know how they plan on doing it yet, but I'll call it a debate. They've debates already set up for June and July. That's two.
Right.
So you've got to have a couple in August. You got to have a couple in September. And I'm just wondering if he's going to wait and look, I'm going to let everybody go after each other and then I'll get in September or October
mm-hmm.
after the country says these people are nuts. Can you give us somebody who's just sane on the Democrat side?
Right. Because that's what starts to change the numbers. That's what every, you know, the people in the middle where they go, okay, I can hold my nose for a Biden. But I can't with anyone who's going to be an activist. And it will be. That's going to be the battle. In 2020, for the Democratic Party, it will be the activist versus the old school non-activist. And don't get me wrong. Biden is a liberal. And the problem with them going back and talking in these, as a party, if it happened, talking in these grand generalities and not getting specific about what they want and promoting the exact ideas and how they feel about people is the fact that that's what they did before. That was the Bill Clinton era of the Democratic Party, where, of course, they were liberal. And Obama, to a certain extent, coming in, he wouldn't say that he supported gay marriage.
Yeah, he would. Yeah.
So all of these things that come back to, essentially, they all sound great, but they mean nothing. That's the playbook of the old school, represented by Joe Biden if he runs. And then the other side is the activist side, with the Cory Booker or Kamala Harris or Elizabeth Warren, where they're going to be very clear and precise about what they want to do. Now, there's no way to pay for what they want to do, but that's the two sides that will be battling for the nomination. And you know, in 2016, it was Bernie. So he was kind of the radical old white guy. And he was the one that got, the fire going, especially when, by the time he got out to the West Coast, and he was winning, you know, big states in the primary. That was something the youth was catching on to, and it was part of the Occupy movement. We want free college. We want this. We want that.
It's the billionaire's fault.
Yep. And so those are your two sides. I guess it remains to be seen.
Maybe there's another side. Maybe Biden could bring aboard Claire McCaskill, mm-hmm. and former senator from Missouri.
Right.
And they could call themselves, we are the safe and sane Democrat alternative.
Well, here's my question, too. Does he go that route? I mean, if he runs, would he go that route, or would he go the route of Mitt Romney in 2012 trying to get street cred with then conservative Paul Ryan? I say then conservative Paul Ryan. Remember, that was the whole point of adding Paul Ryan to the ticket, was the conservative street cred that he brought to a guy who was, still is, to a great extent, a moderate. Well, with a Vice President Biden, if he's going to run, does he bring in a Beto O'Rourke?
The only reason I brought that in was I was trying to make a relation to her, sane comments on Democrats back then, Claire McCaskill's.
Right.
And
yeah, yeah.
I wanted to go on the offshoot of the and some radio stations use that, who were safe for the whole family. Mm. We're safe for the whole family. So I just thought that maybe Biden, you know, being the grandfather, age-wise,
yeah, right,
candidate,
right.
Might say, we're the safe and sane Democrat alternative.
Yeah.
After everybody goes crazy. But seriously, I mean, I know they're not going to say that. I mean, that's not going to be a campaign slogan. But really, I just wonder that after all the insanity, whether he may jump in. And then at that particular point, yes, bring in somebody, to be his vice president who is young. But again, that person who is young, promote it subtly that whoever is the vice presidential candidate is under the wing of the experienced, mm-hmm. and knowledgeable, mm-hmm. And presidential candidate with wisdom, Joe Biden.
Yeah. I suspect before he went with a Beto O'Rourke, he would go with a Kamala Harris. If he were going to try and, usher someone in, that would be the move.
Right.
Because it is a contrast. You have a female Veep on the ticket, as a candidate on the ticket. And yeah, that's, I think if he were to make a play, that's the way he would go.
866-90-RED-EYE.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
Mm-hmm.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Carley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. Coming up here, latest information on the Jesse Smollett case. CBS out of Chicago stating that sources telling them what the motive possibly was, that he didn't believe that there was enough reaction to the racist letter that he had received a week earlier, and so he had concocted this whole plan with the brothers. So we'll get to that coming up. We'll tell you about the states that have filed suit over the president's national emergency. By the way, the first lawsuit was filed by landowners.
Right, in Texas.
Yeah,
right,
in Texas. And and we had said that a couple of weeks ago and got hit for that, but we said, well, no, there are everybody, because we got the response, everybody along the border wants to do it. No, they don't.
No, there were a few ranchers that said they welcomed it, but you had already, this was weeks ago, you had the ranchers that said they had already hired the lawyers. They were preparing their case because the federal government was already doing land surveys down there, was already doing surveys for the construction of the wall. And so they're suing based on eminent domain. And that those types of cases will be tied up in the courts for a long time.
Also coming up, some analysis on the, I'm going to dig a myself into a bigger hole interview that former FBI Deputy Assistant Andrew McCabe did with 60 Minutes. Also, the 60 Minutes of foreign correspondent, I can't think of her name right now, Laura Logan.
Yeah, Laura Logan.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, she came out in a, apparently in a, was a podcast interview and said, oh, yeah, the media is really biased to the left.
Yeah, yeah.
Shocking.
Yeah.
The governor of California wants to step up enforcement of illegal pot in California. Why? Because it's affecting the sale of legal pot.
Yeah.
Now, for those in California who don't have a wall, would you be okay if the wall kept out illegal pot?
Or do you like paying less for pot and you support illegal pot?
Yeah, that would be the other question. Amazon wants half of its shipments to be carbon neutral by 2030. We'll ask the question, well, why? Ocasio-Cortez on tax incentives. That got to be pretty funny over the weekend, wasn't it?
Yeah.
As she was schooled by liberals.
Yeah.
So apparently liberals do understand tax incentives and are for them in some cases.
Mm-hmm.
For oil companies, too. Anthony Weiner out of prison, plus a whole bunch more. We got a ton of stuff on the way. Your calls and comments, too. We would love to hear from you. 866-90-RED-EYE. It was a great weekend for news, wasn't it?
Man, it was like nonstop. We got out of here on Friday, and it just started right then. Nonstop all weekend long. For Travel Centers of America, here's your forecast.
Most of the Tuesday will be quiet across the nation. The Northeast, Mid-Atlantic, Midwest, most of the South. Northern Plains and West Coast have calmed down. We will see some snow in the Central Rockies from Denver down through Central New Mexico. There are some rain showers on the Texas coast, south of Houston, and then extending over toward New Orleans. And it'll be that system you'll want to watch for some icing from central Texas into the state of Oklahoma and over to portions of northern Arkansas. And by this time tomorrow, we'll see heavy rain extending from New Orleans up through the lower Tennessee Valley. By the time you get into the central Illinois, Ohio, and Indiana area, we will pick up some potential icing, primarily between I-70 and I-80 from the Illinois border back into the Mid-Atlantic. Look for winter weather advisories to be connected with that system tomorrow. There's a look at your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Thanks so much, John. 866-90 Red Eye.
patriarchy, oppression, and injustice. Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Carly, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. I saw this when I woke up the latest news on Jesse Smollett and what happened there. It said Empire actor Jesse Smollett, upset after a racist letter sent to the show's studio, didn't get a bigger reaction, is suspected of paying two men to attack him a week later, according to multiple sources with direct knowledge of the investigation. When the letter didn't get enough attention, he concocted the staged attack, a source told, this is from Chicago, CBS2 investigator Brad Edwards. Other sources corroborated that information. The blockbuster revelation into at least part of Smollett's potential motive comes 2 days after it was reported that Smollett and two brothers staged the attack, Ola and Abel and Sundario, staged the attack on January 29th. CBS2 spoke exclusively to the brothers Monday afternoon in a joint statement. They said, "We are not racist. We are not homophobic. We are not anti-Trump. We were born and raised in Chicago and are American citizens." Smollett received a letter containing a white powder on January 22nd. The letter was mailed to Chicago's CineSpace Studios, where the show Empire is filmed. The letter prompted a hazmat response. Chicago Police Department said the white substance was later determined to be aspirin. Now, this is the interesting part here. The note was crafted with letters apparently cut out from magazines to form words. The pieced-together message contained racial and homophobic threats directed at Smollett. A magazine is one of the pieces of evidence retrieved from the brothers' home last week during a search conducted by the Chicago Police Department. Investigators also recovered a book of stamps. Now, look, not saying that there can't be a magazine and a book of stamps and that they had nothing to do with mailing the letter. But that seems to be what's being implied, that that is something that the CPD must be looking into.
Whether the entire thing, including the letter, was staged.
Right. When asked about the letter in a televised interview last week, Smollett said, "On the letter, it had a stick figure hanging from a tree with a gun pointed towards it. It also had MAGA, Make America Great Again, a reference to Donald Trump campaign slogan, written as a return address. In due course, all the facts will reveal themselves. And at the end of the day, my clients are honest and credible," said the brother's attorney.
Well, and what was interesting, too, is she, the attorney for the two brothers, was saying, "I don't represent Smollett, I don't represent anyone else but my two clients." So she seemed to be clearly avoiding questions about the actor, but then pointing out that this entire investigation has taken a much different turn over the weekend, which it did. I don't know of any, in fact, major news organization that isn't reporting this angle of it now.
Chicago police say the FBI is handling the investigation surrounding the letter because that is a federal level concern.
Because you sent it by mail.
Yep. Smollett claims two men attacked him early January 29th as he was heading to his apartment. He said they yelled racial and homophobic slurs at him, poured a chemical on him, and put a rope around his neck. Sources say at least one of the brothers bought the rope used in the incident at Smollett's request. The sources say the Empire actor paid for the rope, which was purchased at the Crafty Beaver Hardware Store the weekend of January 25th. Sources said one of the brothers held the rope and poured bleach while the other wore a plain red hat and yelled slurs at Smollett. The sources say the red hat was bought at an Uptown beauty supply store and that the attack was supposed to happen before January 29th. The brothers told detectives the three men rehearsed the attack days prior to it happening. Smollett paid the brothers $3,500. Wow.
Yeah, the TMZ was reporting over the weekend that if they were going to pursue this, that there could be, this could be given to a grand jury that could decide what to do that in terms with that in terms of filing a false police report, because that is against the law. And then you add the federal aspect of it. If the entire thing included sending things through the mail, now you've broken the federal law. Now, here's my question. Filing a false police report. What about filing a false hate crime related police report? Because if we delve into the area
and using the Federal Postal Service to initiate,
yeah, which I mentioned just a minute ago, but beyond that, is it the same? If we're going to have a law, set of laws that says that if you have a different motivation in your crime, we're going to classify it as a hate crime, and the FBI gets involved in that. You're violating somebody's rights beyond the norm and with a very specific type of motivation. Is there a different charge for filing that kind of report? If we're going to have a law that says, or set of laws that says, we must treat this kind of action differently, then filing the false police report with that same motivation should also come with something additional, should it not?
I've always been against the concept of hate crimes, but if you're going to have what you call a hate crime,
mm-hmm.
then, of course, creating this is to do what? It's to create hate.
Mm-hmm.
Why he did that was to create hate by his description that it was white men. And if you're talking about ethnicity, there can be a hate crime. Hate crimes have been prosecuted when you have had the attack on a white person due to race. So, but when you talk about hate crimes, as we have said, I don't know if the hate crimes are normally attached to when a violent action is done. But when you look at this overall, what would be the charge because you use the U.S. mail? Because there was a, it, if all of this is true, then, and I mean including the part of it where the initial thing that was mailed, the initial hate mailed to him was a conspiracy by Smollett and the two brothers at that point. Now, that started out, the whole thing might have not been a conspiracy from the beginning, because if he was furious that he didn't get the response that he thought or the sympathy that he thought he should have gotten, then can you say they were two separate cases, or does one lead to the other? Would one have never happened if the other hadn't happened, if he hadn't sent, you know, it by email? Can you tie it all together as a, you know, as a conspiracy to file a false report? And I don't know. I don't know, because you're talking about federal and state law there at that point. So I don't know. I'm asking the question. I will tell you this. It was so great from the media to begin with that you must believe Jussie Smollett. Then when we started talking about it, which was about a week after, and the reason is, and we explained it at that time, the reason that we didn't talk about it much, number one, there were a ton of things going on that week to begin with, but we said, it's somebody making an accusation and we have nothing there. It's the same way that we view every criminal case out there, that until we know the facts, we don't make judgments on it. So about a week into it, we said, okay, here's what police are saying. Here's what reporters are saying. We were trolled.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we were being trolled by email on it, but we thought we were extremely fair because we went point by point on, okay, this part of the story, well, that could happen. Yeah, if you're a victim of crime, yeah, that could happen. because it was brand new. We didn't know.
Only one or two Chicago local news sources that were talking about their sourced reports or issuing their sourced reports about it possibly being a hoax. I thought that was peculiar because what motivation would they have?
Right.
If a reporter wanted to do this and take that on, that's a very serious consideration. Not that they don't make mistakes, but it's a very serious consideration. Then over the weekend, over this past weekend, I don't know of any major media group that hasn't written about the hoax side of this whole thing.
And just for bringing it up, and the trolling was obviously people that supported Jussie Smollett and accused us of being unfair and racist and everything in the book. And it's like, what are you talking? And they accused us of not doing things that we did specifically. And it was like, wow, that was really weird reaction. Because like most cases, number one, even a week into it when I first reported this, man, the only reason I know who Jussie Smollett is now is because of this. I had no idea who he was. No idea. Didn't know him from anybody else in the entire world. So when this first came out, I think to both of us, it was like, now I'd heard of Empire, but I didn't know any of the actors on Empire. So when it came out, it's as we look at all criminal things, I don't know him. I don't know his reputation. We learned it. We learned the fact that he was that he hated Trump, obviously, and had tweeted about Trump viciously in the past. And we brought up, as we all do, what are the possibilities in any type of criminal investigation? Could this have happened? Could it have been a hoax? Could it have been true? Does a victim react this way? Does a victim react that way? But we made no judgments because it's impossible for us. And we don't do that. If you listen to the show, especially on criminal investigations, whether it was Trayvon Martin or whatever, everybody took a side and took opinions that had nothing to do with the actual case. We didn't do that.
No, and when any story like this comes out, you're not going to get anything until the authorities tell you something specifically. And if another news agency is reporting something, then we'll be very clear that they're the ones reporting it. I thought it was really peculiar because it was Chicago area local TV stations that were first on this.
Yeah, they were. Yep.
And you know they were getting just probably bombarded with phone calls and emails about this whole thing, about the way they were covering it.
Well, you and I went back, and so did other media, but you and I have always talked about this when Trump ran for president, then afterwards, that every single major supposed hate crime story that came out about Trump supporters ended up being not true.
Right.
And I'm talking about the major ones, that there might have been other ones that only got picked up locally. We're talking about every single major one that made national news. And a few people over the weekend went over all of the different ones that happened where they were all recanted later on, or the police found out, nope, this person is lying and making it up. We have, it seems in this country, we have an epidemic of this occurring, does it not? By the way, I'm saying that because that's the way that the left would do it.
Mm-hmm. Well, again, how many times is this going to happen? But if they believe they're going to get away with it and not get called on it, I would think you would look at that, especially as a group, the Democratic Party, but the left in general, the movement, and say this clearly doesn't work because eventually you're going to get caught. As we said, the police will know if this is a hoax, and they'll investigate it, yeah. And someone will likely be charged as a result of it.
They will figure it out. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
Hey.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Hurley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Welcome and good morning. Coming up following the top of the hour, we'll get to some of your calls and comments, people wanting to comment on the Jussie Smollett thing. If you noticed over the weekend also the media trying to say, well, you know, we were calm and rational about the whole Smollett thing and just covered what the news was. You know, I think what the it's interesting because it seems as if even news reporters and those that are journalists, not opinion makers, but journalists, believe that when they're on Twitter, they're not.
Yeah, they believe their personalities or it's their personal page. They believe, and sometimes it could be one and the same. But the problem is if you work for a news organization and your job is to report the news, then you're expected to be accurate. You're expected for that information to be true. No wonder they're losing credibility by the second.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Hurley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. I'm Gary McNamara along with Eric Hurley.
This hour for Freightliner, run smart, helping you run more efficiently is Freightliner's number one goal.
You know, if the police come out and verify what all the source stories are coming out from Chicago and other media covering this, because now the national media is on it, and everybody is on the same line here that this was a hoax. I don't know anybody reporting that their sources are saying it was not and it was a legit hate crime attack anymore. Not anybody out there. So, but if all of this is true, even to the point of if it gets to the point that they say that he sent the letter to, think about this. This is a perfect example of the Trump derangement syndrome that exists out there. We've heard a lot about it, but this would be the most perfect example if everything turns out to be true. Think about it. If you've seen any of his, and they have the tweet that Jussie Smollett wrote a couple of weeks before all of this happened when Trump was, you know, talking about the wall, and he just went off on them. I mean, just, now, again, it was nothing that we haven't seen from a Rob Reiner, a meathead, but it was still went off on it. But if he did all of this, think about this. Think about where this incredible hatred, based on what we're still trying to figure out, but this incredible hatred, it has to be this raw hate that just removes all type of logic from you, that you actually do something, you include other people in it. And Eric and I have always talked about the fact, if you're going to commit a crime, you might want to do it by yourself, because if you have a conspiracy, odds are somebody from that conspiracy will eventually testify against you.
Yes.
Especially if you're the ringleader. If you're the one that has come up with it, the cops are always going to come up with the ringleader. But to do all of this and think that the cops are not going to figure it out, to be that delusional, to do something also where you bring the FBI into it.
You know,
it shows you the emotional hate and rage.
And, you know, the
that exists.
The claims out there that filing a false police report, look at what you would have to do to go through all of that to make this thing happen. According to all of the reports, if they are accurate and true, you're rehearsing, you're going out and buying all of, to do what? Well, to render a false emotion, well, a true emotion based on false information from a large group of people. So you're an actor on a hit TV series. but you're not getting enough attention. When we talk about that, again, assuming all is accurate and true in the latest reports over the weekend that this appears to be a hoax. We've been saying it for years. The left has taught generations of people now to wake up every day and be the victim. But it's not just about being the victim. You've got to be the latest victim for a number of reasons. It can't be just one reason anymore. And you have to show how you're a victim every day. When I say that they wake up looking for a reason to be a victim.
Wow.
Can you imagine?
Not looking, creating a way.
Right. Well, and that's it. When they can't find one, they go out and make it up. Not just saying something to somebody, but staging something like this takes a considerable amount of energy and effort to do.
Right. And investment.
Yes.
If it's true, he paid them $3,500.
Right. Can you imagine that? You're making a ton of money on a hit TV show. Your future is pretty much set. You could retire today if you wanted to. You have no worries in the world financially. The world, in fact, if the TV show is a hit, and according to the makers of the TV show, his character is pivotal to that show. I've never seen Empire. I'm aware of it, but I've never seen it because I don't watch much primetime TV to begin with. But where in the world, where is it that you're a victim? You know, we talk about professional athletes and how these are the elite of the elite. If you get on a network TV show and you're there for any amount of time, you've made it in Hollywood.
How many times have you and I said that when you continue, when the media, as we know, and it's over and over and over again, Trump is Hitler, Trump is Hitler, Trump's a fascist, Trump's a Hitler, Trump is a fascist. Well, when you say Trump is Hitler and Trump is a fascist, those words actually have meaning. When you say Trump is Hitler, what you're stating to people is Trump is willing to kill 6 million Jews. When you say Trump is a fascist, you are saying that he wishes to become a dictator of America.
Yeah.
There's no indication of that.
Well, and when if it is accurate and true that this was all a hoax, you want people to believe that not just this president is dangerous, but the people that support him are inherently dangerous. To the extent that they're willing to put a noose around a black man's neck, that they're willing to assault him and attack him. I'm not saying there aren't dangerous people out there. There are plenty of dangerous people out there. But the fact of the matter is you're trying to create a false scenario. You're creating something out of nothing, something that doesn't exist, and you want the people of that neighborhood, that city, and the world to believe that there are a couple of very dangerous individuals that are politically motivated to the extent that they would do something like this.
By the way, what do you think about the mindset of the terror that he created in his own neighborhood,
right,
that these people existed?
Yep, and they're still out there.
And we're still out there looking to do anything, looking to attack anybody.
Right. Right.
Because they're Trump supporters, and so they're deranged.
Right.
They're Trump supporters who are willing to come after you and pour bleach on you and put a noose around your neck.
Mm-hmm.
Think about, if all of this is true, how then Jussie Smollett terrorized his own community.
Right. Because that's the job of the police is to, you know, make people who are, bring people to justice. If you're guilty of something, bring those people to justice. But also to communicate with the neighborhoods, the communities that they serve in, and help squash that fear if there are, if there they believe someone out there is dangerous in such a high profile case, especially, then they need to settle the nerves of the individuals who are concerned that there are dangerous people like this in their neighborhood. That's part of the job. If this whole thing is a hoax, I can't imagine how much damage it's going to do, first of all, to the people who actually are victims of crimes.
That's a great point. Yeah. Anybody who is legitimately attacked.
Right.
For any reason.
For any reason. But if we hear something, imagine that, I don't know, a month or a few months from now, something happens and it is racially motivated. And the story comes out. Maybe it's not a Hollywood actor, but the story comes out. People are going to look at that and go, now I got to wonder if that's true. There are real victims in the world. There are dangerous people in the world. But when you go out of your way to create something like this, again, if this is a hoax, then what you've done is you've undermined the real reality-based fear when something actually does happen, when there are dangerous people out there.
You know, I was thinking the other day, his lawyer spoke up and said that Jussie is really, a statement that I would just, you shouldn't make this statement, that he can't believe that the two brothers either, you know, said that they were involved in the attack or that they conspired to do it. He was trying to have it both ways, and I'm like,
right.
I'm thinking to myself, to the lawyer, shut up.
Yeah, you probably shouldn't talk.
Yeah, don't report as to what he is, you know, what he is saying, because you can't have it. You can't have it both ways. And so, you know, I started thinking, when does a warrant go out to his checking account to find out if there was $3,500 taken out?
That's probably already, they're probably already going through that motion, because you are going to look for proof that if the two brothers are claiming they were paid, you're going to look for some kind of trail, and the first trail you would have is the electronic trail of whatever transaction that would be.
We had said Thursday night, Friday morning, when the brothers were arrested but not charged,
mm-hmm.
We said we're going to find out whether it was a hoax.
Yep.
Here in the next 24 to 48 hours,
yep.
Probably sooner than later, as we did on Friday,
mm-hmm.
Because that's why they did it. They arrested them and said, well, look, either you committed it or you were involved in it.
Right.
One or the other. So you better tell us.
Right.
You either did. And remember, I'm sure their lawyer was telling them, you come clean. Why? Because they want the ringleader in all of this. They want the person, again, when you go back to it, you know, you may have helped him do it, but he is the one, the money person, the one who arranges, the one who concocted the crime. He is the one that we want. You will make great defense witnesses.
Right.
And that's what your lawyer, I'm sure the lawyer told the two brothers.
Right.
You cooperate completely here, because at the most you walk away with a slap on the hand, because you will testify against him.
Right. And that's exactly how every case is played. The smaller players are going to be the ones that are pressured to talk. And eventually they're going to talk, because they don't want to go to prison. It is not a terribly complicated process. They're not going to go to prison over something that he was orchestrating.
Right.
Who knows? They could come out and say, again, if it was a hoax, they could come out and say, well, we just thought he was going to put, you know, talk about it on social media. We didn't know he was going to go to the police with it. We thought that this was going to be some kind of, you know, activism, you know, grandstanding here. And he offered us $3,500 and we took it.
So I guess the part is, because this is the whole thing when we talked about the phone call with his manager.
Mm.
So that was set up too?
Right.
I'm going to call the manager as I'm being attacked.
Mm-hmm.
You guys scream, make America great again.
Well, you're creating an alibi. You're creating that, you're the, that while it's not an eyewitness, it is a witness of sorts if that other person on the other line heard it. And the manager can be completely innocent
right.
of the whole conspiracy part of it.
And that's why initially on people said, well, there must be some credibility if he called his manager and his manager heard it, because the next thing would have to be it was a complete hoax that he set up. And at the point when that first came out, probably no one said, well, no, come on. These guys not going to set this all up
right.
and pay these guys to do it and to actually attack him and to buy the noose and do everything. Apparently, yes.
Yeah.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Tips from J.J. Keller and Associates Incorporated on DOT drug and alcohol testing. A common question among drivers might be, can I use a prescription drug and still drive? The answer is yes, if certain conditions are met. DOT regulations strictly prohibit Schedule 1 drugs, a class of substances with no currently accepted medical use and a high potential for abuse. Use of all other prescription drugs hinges on what the prescribing doctor tells a driver. For a driver to stay on the road while taking prescription drugs, the prescribing doctor needs to be familiar with the driver's job duties and health history. The doctor must also tell the driver that it's safe to take the prescription and it won't create a safety risk while operating the CMV. If your doctor doesn't know the duties associated with driving a truck, you're considered medically unable to operate a CMV. This tip was brought to you by J.J. Keller and Associates Incorporated. Visit us at jjkeller.com.
This has been the Meritor Driver Report, brought to you by Pilot Flying J, Shell Rotella, and Meritor Aftermarket. Run with the bull.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
I almost said Eric Harley. I'm Gary McNamara. He's Eric Harley.
Yeah, you don't want to be me.
This hour Gary McNamara. Eric.
This hour for Freightliner. Run smart. Helping you run more efficiently is Freightliner's number one goal.
Well, the bizarre interview that Andy McCabe did with 60 Minutes and coming up here in just a little bit, and just how insane it was, because they never asked the question that we said last week. Well, if they don't ask this question, they're a bunch of political hacks. The question would be this. What was the evidence that you had that Donald Trump committed collusion? The evidence that they had from McCabe's own mouth, Trump's own words. What was that? Well, that Trump wanted, ask Comey to, take it easy on Michael Flynn.
Yeah, right.
But they already knew what Michael Flynn did. They already heard that. They knew the conversation. They knew Michael Flynn did nothing. They knew Michael Flynn had no contacts. This was nothing to do with hacking the election. They knew it. They knew it before. They knew it, as you said during our pre-show meeting, they knew it before Flynn did.
Yeah. They were aware there was nothing there.
Right. And then on the other stuff is just mind-boggling that, well, he kept going to Rosenstein and saying that in the memo to fire Comey, he wanted Russia in there, Russia in there, Russia in there. Well, if you're trying to hide Russia collusion, well, then you would do the exact opposite.
Right.
We'll play the audio coming up from McCabe here in just a little bit. And they said, he had a stellar FBI career. He was a Republican. Well, stellar except that he got fired for leaking and then lying about leaking. If that's a stellar career.
Yeah, OJ had a stellar career. This is the adoration of the media, because with Comey and McCabe, well, now and probably Rosenstein after mid-March at some point, the book deals, you and I have a theory that the book deals and the positioning here seems very defensive in nature, as if they're trying to set up their own defense if something comes down on them.
Yes.
It was that way with Comey. It's that way with McCabe. It feels like they're trying to defend themselves here.
I think his interview with 60 Minutes damaged the credibility of the FBI and damaged his credibility.
Well, remember what we asked about Comey. Why would you put the book out now?
Well, the other thing is, you and I said the same thing too. We said the thing about Comey is, it seemed, even from the first interview, the first testimony, it's like he didn't have an investigative mind. He didn't think. He thought he thinks in an odd way. Same thing with McCabe.
Yes,
I thought the same thing. I'm like, these guys don't sound like they're law enforcement investigators. They sound like they're emotional politicians.
That's exactly what they sound like. And if the tone is set in that office, in that setting, and you're second to the then director Comey, it explains it, because everybody thinks that way.
They're right 100% of the time. Just ask them. Red Eye Radio.
Right. Yeah, we are. That's true. 100% of the time.
He is Eric Hurley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE.
This hour for Freightliner, Run Smart, helping you run more efficiently is Freightliner's number one goal.
The news from yesterday, attorney generals for California, New York, and 14 other states on Monday filed a lawsuit in the Ninth Circuit, as predicted, by the president against the White House's national emergency declaration over border security, claiming the president has, quote, veered the country towards a constitutional crisis of his own making, end of quote. The litigation brought before the federal trial court in the Northern District of California seeks an injunction to prevent Trump from shifting billions of dollars from military construction to the border without explicit congressional approval. The suit also asked a court to declare Trump's actions illegal, arguing that Trump showed a, quote, a flagrant disregard of fundamental separation of powers principles ingrained in the United States Constitution, end of quote, by violating the Constitution's presentment and appropriations clause, which governs federal spending. The litigation additionally, this is a new one, additionally includes allegations that Trump is violating the National Environmental Policy Act.
Oh, yes.
By planning to build a wall that could impact the environment.
Oh.
Without first completing the necessary environmental impact reports. The attorneys general specifically argue that the border wall does not use the armed forces as required under the federal law, which governs construction projects during national emergencies. Acting Defense Secretary Patrick Shanahan reportedly said this week he is unsure there was a military necessity at the border or how much the agency would need to spend. So there you go. There's where we are there. Now, I mean, it's going to this really goes quiet. There's nowhere to go with this now. This becomes quiet. It moves into the background, and other things now will come out.
Right. I mean, there's still, you know, the whole DACA thing is still in the court.
Yeah.
You know, it's likely going to be a long, lengthy process. I don't know if you're right now, if you're the president, or the Justice Department would be handling the suit itself, but If you're at the Justice Department, are you gonna look to fast track this to the highest court?
Will be an interesting point. Will the president say let's fast track this now, or ask the court to fast track it for a couple of reasons? Now, one, you wouldn't want to fast track it because you don't want to deal with the defeat right now. Two, you do want to fast track it so you don't avoid a defeat next year leading up to the election.
Right. And I, you can still be on the campaign trail saying we're fighting, we're going to win this in the court. Then after November 2020, well, we didn't win. You know, if the a decision comes down after Election Day, then it's not going to be that big of a deal. If it's expedited, if it's fast-tracked, you could see a decision as early as summer of next year.
Here's the point. Even DACA, I mean, look how long it's taking DACA to go through.
Right.
It's been what?
And they're not going to even hear it until October, which means a decision on that likely wouldn't come before next summer.
Which would be, if they're not going to hear it till October, and then that means that we don't get it till June or July, depending on when they finally release it, what day they release it. Mm-hmm. You are talking about at that point what a full 2 years,
right? Yep, and that's if you're in the Justice Department, if your consideration is the political game, you don't fast track it. And the point is that you don't have all the confidence in the world that you're going to win. You can say you do. The president can say he does. But if they don't, if they truly internally don't believe they can win it, then the last thing you want to do is lose right before the election next year, just months before the election. So you don't fast track it. It would be, I think it would be, it likely wouldn't get fast tracked unless the Justice Department was really, really pushing forward with this.
Well, I think that, and you were the one that first came up with it. Well, I mean, I know we both talked about it, but you were the one that really was emphasizing, I believe, the fact that, look, the whole eminent domain thing is going to be key here.
Right.
And it was interesting that the first lawsuit that was filed was by Texas landholders.
Right.
Who say, no, we don't agree to this. Mm-hmm. That the president cannot enact a national emergency that would require eminent domain, because it's really not a national emergency. And last week I said this. I said, look, one of the things is what you look at here in a whole national emergency is, and again, I have not read all the precedent that's been done on it. So again, this is still very early analysis, and admittedly, a lot of it based on ignorance as to what past precedent has been said on the National Emergencies Law of 1976. I want to make this clear. But from what I get, and we said this on Thursday night, Friday morning show, that I would look at this, and this shows you how you can evolve when something new comes into it. My initial thought would have been, this isn't a national emergency. Why? The president didn't declare it last week, didn't declare it last month, didn't declare it last June. Now, that statement would be important as a judge, because understanding that national emergencies have traditionally been when an acute situation happens, something is going on, and all of a sudden, boom, something happens and the executive branch is needed. Understanding the relationship between the executive branch and the legislature. The reason that the president can immediately, if we're attacked, go to war is because we don't have time, and the founding fathers knew we didn't have time for Congress to get involved in it.
Mm-hmm.
So if you had, hypothetically, for the sake of argument, if you had a million people coming to the border to cross, and the president sent down the military right there and said, I'm calling it a national emergency because they're going to come in this space here, and I want a wall built there. If it was for a specific thing that was happening, I believe the president would win. Now, I said the other day, I believe that would be that's the weakness of the president's case, is the fact that there isn't anything that has changed. In fact, you can make the argument that since, and by the way, this is not an argument that I don't feel that there's still an emergency situation down there that needs to be resolved.
Mm-hmm.
It's, we can think it's an emergency and it's still not under law a national emergency.
Right.
But if you say, so I look at that scenario where they're all crossing the border and he sends down troops to block this million person caravan coming down, mm-hmm. and we want to build fences, we want to build slats, we can build the slats over this 10-mile section and we can close it off at that time. I don't see how the courts could reverse them. But because this is more of an immigration plan, and the president in his own words, and again, knowing that the Ninth Circuit Court, I bet you the Ninth Circuit Court takes some of the president's own words that he said the other day on Friday.
Yeah, I would think.
When he implied it really isn't this national emergency from right. that standpoint, but we've tried everything, and so we might as well try that.
We're going to go down this road. Right. And if that's your consideration publicly, then there's not a court in the world that would ignore that.
Well, especially the Ninth Circuit, because they didn't ignore it for the travel ban. Mm-hmm. So you know they're going to bring that up. Now, I said also, but even if that was my feeling as a federal judge, I would be very hesitant to get in between and say, wait a minute, I'm going to judge now what a national emergency is,
right.
or I'm going to interpret a law that has too much gray area in it, that as a judge I probably would have said, well, let Congress and the executive branch fight this out. Congress passed a law. Then I thought over the weekend. I said, the whole eminent domain thing. All of a sudden, you have a person who's being damaged. That person is the property owner. And now we're talking law. We're not talking your opinion because I got emails. What do you mean it's not an emergency? Not saying that I don't believe it is. There's emergency situations down there. It's whether it falls legally under the law and the scope and the limitations of the National Emergencies Act, what was it, in 1976. Mm-hmm. That's the entire point. And whether it's clear, it's not whether I think it's an emergency or whether Eric thinks it's an emergency or whether you think it's an emergency. It's whether it's an emergency by law where the executive branch has full authority in that particular case. And that's where I thought about, okay, wait a minute, I have a victim here. Mm-hmm. Is this truly a national emergency? And at that point, when you have a victim, at times, as a federal judge, then you're forced to make it and say, wait a minute, this just isn't between the executive branch and the Congress to do it. There are Americans that will be harmed, which is, by the way, part of the talk that conservatives gave, saying the president can do this because no Americans would be harmed, like Nancy Pelosi, where Americans would lose their Second Amendment rights because guns are a problem.
Right.
Well, you just lose that argument when you have Americans that will be damaged because of eminent domain.
Right. And the precedent set on eminent domain in the past.
Yes. Oh, by the way, did you see that in the state of Texas, the judge said for the bullet train, they can't file eminent domain? And they said the whole argument was, well, we're a railroad company. And they said, just because you say you're a railroad company doesn't mean you are. The company has not been in the railroad business before. And now they're saying they're a railroad company. I don't know how long that's going to, I don't know if that's going to be overturned. Mm. By another state judge, but I mean that's the state law in eminent domain, apparently.
Right. Right.
So right now the bullet train people say, because we had talked about this last week in Texas, the bullet train people say this isn't going to stop them from continuing. They're going to appeal, and they believe they'll ultimately win. But we had just mentioned the bullet train last week,
and eminent domain,
and eminent domain. Mm-hmm. Yes. So
because then it would be okay. Well, what part of your business? How much of your business is freight? And serves the same as other rail, right? Not just passenger, but freight and everything else would be considered. If it applies, it would apply also to a new company,
right.
even if they weren't established.
Because a rail,
I don't support eminent domain,
right.
But if you have that law and it applies, then the same standard would be: is that company going to be behaving in the same way? Business-wise. Right.
Because if you're a railroad company, you can file for eminent domain in the state of Texas.
Right.
That's
right.
The whole point.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Your calls and comments coming up. What's going on at the FBI? The Jesse Smollett or Smollett case, however it is pronounced, or Jesse, excuse me. We've been talking about that. Plus your calls and comments on everything. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
We'll be right back.
It's Red Eye Radio, 866-90-RED-EYE. I'm Gary McNamara, along with Eric Harley.
This hour for Freightliner. Run smart, helping you run more efficiently is Freightliner's number one goal.
Coming up, you know, day in and day out, I think it was Victor Davis Hanson who said over the weekend that this eventually, the history books will eventually look at what's going on as the U.S., the biggest U.S. political scandal in American history. And, you know, we're talking about the concerted effort by the Hillary campaign, by law enforcement, federal law enforcement, by intelligence agencies, by the media to try to delegitimize an election, a presidential election. And at the same time, as we now know from Andrew McCabe, think about and try to get to the point of a bureaucratic coup, as they're now referring to it as. It really, you know, and they said by doing so in the coordinated effort by the politicians, the law enforcement, the media, the popular celebrities, by so demonizing a president, unjustifiable, because there's nothing that he did worth it, but to the point of talking impeachment treason without any evidence, that when you finally attempt to get rid of him, the public will be relieved if the coordinated effort to put out the propaganda is done successfully.
Right.
I think he makes a great point, and we'll make our points as to why coming up on the top of the hour.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. The bureaucratic coup, as they're calling it, the attempt or the talk about a bureaucratic coup in the FBI and the Department of Justice, we'll get to that coming up here in just a little bit. 866-90-RED-EYE. We've talked about a lot of different things, including what's being reported by, I think, all of the media now, and that's that their source stories out of the Chicago Police Department show that Jussie Smollett attack, race hate crime was a hoax. And we've got a lot of your comments on that coming up. If you'd like to get in, 866 90 Red Eye, and where it goes from here now that CBS out of Chicago is reporting a possible motive that he wasn't happy. Smollett wasn't happy with the initial response to the hate letter that was sent to him. Also reporting that, and this is where I believe they're going without them saying it, that the police also from the brother's apartment confiscated stamps and a magazine, and it was a letter that was written by using letters from a magazine. Well, if that happened, that sets up an entirely different scenario and probably a different crime, as the FBI is actually investigating that portion of the incident, because it's the United States Postal Service that was used in order to mail that. By the way, is that an implied? Have you mailed? Think about that. If you send this is more than just a hate crime, because if they sent a powder,
right?
Is that an act of terrorism?
If they can show that the intent would be to invoke fear, yes.
because it just wouldn't terrorize him, whoever opens it up or whoever's in that building at that time.
Yep.
You get that, and there's a powder in it. You don't know what that powder is.
Mm-hmm.
That's a serious crime right there.
You're deliberately putting that in that package in order to scare people. That's terrorism.
And we also talking about the president calling a national emergency. 16 states now and others groups now suing the president. We talked about the first suit actually came from Texas landowners saying what the president was doing was unconstitutional. I want to get to one call here because this bring up some interesting points that we were discussing earlier. Mike in Wilmington, North Carolina. Mike, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show. Hi.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
And that's exactly what I want to address is the seeming temper that you're putting on the president's declaring a national emergency. I think you described the landowners as victims, quote unquote. And
we didn't. I don't know that we described anybody as victims.
We said what we described was they are in federal law. When you file a suit, your suit becomes legitimate because you file it as a victim. You're a victim. You have been harmed. You have been harmed either by the legislation or you've been harmed by the executive order.
Legal terminology.
Whether they have standing or not.
Yes, go ahead.
Being an attorney, I'm okay with legal terminology, and I understand that, and I just was bringing the point that you mentioned that they were victims. Here's the deal with eminent domain. Eminent domain comes from the argument that the government will use is public policy. Now, they have to cross that hurdle that public policy outweighs the private property rights. The government will argue that economically, that if you consider the cost of to the American public of all of these illegal immigrations coming across the border, it's millions of dollars. Millions of dollars.
Right. Nobody's debating that, but what you're talking about is you're talking about if Congress is making the law and the legislation.
The question here is
that's not what's going on. This is the president declaring a national emergency, which is not, again, where if you're calling a national emergency at that point, eminent domain may not even be required if it's a national emergency. Because if they were, and that's why we use the example, if an army was crossing or a terrorist group was crossing,
we're not arguing. We're on the same page here, except to say that there is absolutely no argument that eminent domain will be a successful argument against the president's having called the national emergency. The eminent domain part is, all you have to do is establish the public policy outweighs the rights of the private individual, and then you have to give the private individual fair compensation. If, in fact, the landowner is not accepting of the compensation offered, there are court avenues they can pursue to get. It's all about if the public policy argument holds the day, then all that remains after that.
There is no, and that's the problem that we have talked about then over and over again. And we thank you for your call, but what we're talking about is the fact that the eminent domain applies only when it's part of the public policy that Congress is doing. If it's public policy, it's not a national emergency.
Right.
If you're enacting just public policy, that's not, the president has declared a national emergency, and that's what we've declared the problem will be if he tries to declare eminent domain or just seize the land. At that point, it's not public policy which comes from Congress. It's the executive branch.
And that part of the Taft-Hartley Act of 1947 did not include, they had talked about it, an amendment that would include seizure, government seizure of property. And it did not include that, even in the state in the case of an emergency. So if Congress wanted to go back and revisit that, they could and say, okay, we will now include property seizures. And then they, someone would challenge that, I'm sure, and take it to the highest court to see if that law is constitutional or not. But Congress and the president could act together and use eminent domain. But then the president wouldn't be using state of emergency. A declaration of an emergency, national emergency, would not be necessary. The question is, does he have that power to do that alone in declaring this national emergency? He could do both. Let's say that there were, you pointed out, let's say there were a caravan of a million people and they were coming across, or whatever, the Mexican army was coming to the border and we believe they were going to invade U.S. soil. Then together, the president could issue a separate declaration of national emergency, and also there would be a separate act where Congress could cooperate and say, we can put this wall, we want to use eminent domain to put this wall or barrier up.
Well, I guess my initial point is, and this is where we talk about it being an acute problem with the president, that's if they're crossing and they're going to cross, that at that point when you call a national emergency and you send troops down to the border, you could build barricades, or the troops could be involved, or you could build barricades while the troops are down there in order to keep those people from crossing the border. And at that, and if it's that specific, here's this 15-mile wide thing, this is where they're crossing right now, boom, we're going to do it. Or even if you want to take it to the bigger case, we can go to Red Dawn.
Yeah, right, yeah.
Go to the movie Red Dawn,
yeah,
where they're coming up by the millions, the mm-hmm. troops. You have a million troops covering the entire, so you send 2 million American troops, we don't even have 2 million, down to the border, and tanks and airplanes and everything else, and you just seize private property. There is no eminent domain to begin with. That's our point with this whole thing with the president doing it. How does the president alone in the executive branch initiate eminent domain? Do they even have to put in eminent domain, or do they just seize the property?
Well, and that goes back to that the case here, and this goes back to the seizing of the steel mills and the precedent at the Supreme Court.
Yes.
They went back in this case and they reviewed the Taft-Hartley Act and said, it does not, while they did consider it in putting together the Taft-Hartley Act, it did not express permission in that law for the president himself to seize property, even in the case of an emergency.
Right.
So it does not exist in law. And I don't know where the argument would be from the Justice Department. They're going to likely be, I mean, you know, getting into the, okay, yeah, what is the ultimate power of the president? What does the declaration itself?
Yeah, we were not to the last caller, and you said we were on the same page. We were. We weren't arguing that Congress could not, and that's why I stopped
right.
you. We weren't
mm-hmm.
arguing that Congress, if they approved a wall, couldn't go through the process of eminent domain. They could. No, nobody was arguing that. We said when the president declares a national emergency, maybe the term we used, we said the problem is eminent domain. What we meant was if the executive branch themselves tries to use eminent domain or just seize the property, either way they're going to run into problems. Number one, with the steel mill situation with eminent domain. Now, if it's federal land they wish to build it on,
they can do that.
They, you know, the if it's just if the president designates we want it just on federal land, yeah, they could do it.
Mm-hmm.
I believe the president would have a much greater shot. But if some of this, as we know, especially in Texas, is going to be on Texas property owners' land, or they're not sure where they're going to put it yet, but they claim authority over all of it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, at that point, I believe they're going to have a problem because the National Emergency Act does not deal with the process of eminent domain or seizure of private property. And the only precedent that we can find that does, that would be close to it, would be the steel mills, and we've said that's the problem and the hurdle the president would have to overcome.
Right.
But we weren't arguing eminent domain can't be used by Congress. We know that.
Yeah, yeah. That can, in fact, when you look at the process of that, we often get too caught up in the, well, that's their party. Like, their party controls the House, and our party controls the White House. Those are duly elected representatives in the House. That's how it works. Systematically, in terms of the process, those people were put there by the people. They represent the people. It's why one branch can't have too much power.
And that's why initially on I said, well, I probably have problems with the national emergency being declared in this because it doesn't seem to fit. Mm-hmm. Again, it's still a gray area. And so probably my initial response was I'd say, look, you guys work it out. Congress and the executive branch, I don't think the court should be dictating what a national emergency is or is not until you get the lawsuit from the private property owners who say the land's being seized. And at that point, I believe there is. You can go back to some of the precedents. You did the Taft-Hartley Act, whatever, mm-hmm. and you can look at it and say, all right, now you have somebody who is an American citizen who is being harmed by this.
Right. And they have standing in the court.
Right. And at that point, they have standing, and then you can proceed from that point. Is it legit? Can an executive branch, through a national emergency, use eminent domain, or is that strictly for public policy?
Right.
That Congress would dictate that, or can the president just seize the property in a national emergency? From what I know, that hasn't been tested in any way in the courts.
The seizure would be the steel mills, the whole point of that, but even in the case of an emergency, but eminent domain
mm-hmm. That would be, in essence, was he going to pay the steel companies a fair market value?
Yeah, I don't know the details of that case in particular, but because again, there is allowance if Congress is involved. If the Republicans held the House and the Senate, and they were in agreement with the president, the eminent domain thing wouldn't even come into play.
Right. Yeah, we were never arguing
and
whether
then
Congress
it's
could
about,
do eminent
and
domain.
Then it's about funding. And the other part of that, so that's the other part of this lawsuit. A judge at some point is going to look at this and say, well, you're using the Declaration of National Emergency. You're doing that in order to raise funds and in order to reallocate funds for your intended purpose. And that's not the process.
For your policy goals.
Exactly.
866-90-RED-EYE.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. We go to Frank in Dallas, Texas. Frank, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show. Hi.
Hey, let me preface this to begin with, that we were involved with eminent domain with the railroad.
Mm-hmm.
Their initial offer to us was $3,000. We settled for almost $130,000. So these guys down there on the border, they're not going to take the first offer.
No.
The ranchers. And I'm talking from what I hear at the stock shows,
mm-hmm.
Houston and Fort Worth. Their land's diminished. Their borrowing power is diminished because of the border problem. But they're not going to take the first offer from the government.
No, that's a fair point. Even if Congress declared it, there would be a lawsuit. Go ahead.
Well, anyway, I'm not looking at it from the lawsuit side, from a pure law side. I'm looking at it from a horse trader side. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to take your first offer.
Mm-hmm.
And if it takes a lawsuit to get a little bit more, then that's what I'm going to do. Also, on the other side of the coin, from what I hear at the stock shows, is most of these, now I'm talking about ranchers. I'm not I'm not sure about the rest of the landowners, the butterfly people down there. But because my land is diminished in value, my borrowing power against it for cash flow is diminished. So in that aspect, a lot of them down there will welcome the wall because it'll increase their borrowing power.
Right, but again, you're off on a topic that we're not even discussing today. We're not talking about if eminent domain was being used, what you would settle for. Mm-hmm. It's does the national emergency allow for eminent domain or just outright land seizure, which is the problem that the president would have at that point. And that's why Texas landowners were some of the first to sue, the president's executive order there, or national emergency declaration.
Here's your forecast.
Most of the Tuesday will be quiet across the nation. The Northeast, Mid-Atlantic, Midwest, most of the South. Northern Plains and West Coast have calmed down. We will see some snow in the Central Rockies from Denver down through Central New Mexico. There are some rain showers on the Texas coast, south of Houston, and then extending over toward New Orleans. And it'll be that system you'll want to watch for some icing from Central Texas into the state of Oklahoma and over to portions of Northern Arkansas. And by this time tomorrow, we'll see heavy rain extending from New Orleans up through the lower Tennessee Valley. By the time you get into the central Illinois, Ohio, and Indiana area, we will pick up some potential icing, primarily between I-70 and I-80 from the Illinois border back into the Mid-Atlantic. Look for winter weather advisories to be connected with that system tomorrow. There's a look at your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Thanks so much, John. 86690 Red Eye.
Hours of reality every week. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley on Red Eye Radio.
And he's Eric. I'm Gary. 86690 Red Eye. Well, Andrew McCabe on 60 Minutes. We talked about it last week when some of the excerpts came out.
Mm-hmm.
And we had asked the question whether Scott Pelley would ask the most important question. Because they had talked about the fact that since the president, we knew this going into the interview, that the president fired James Comey, and that's what set them off. And we said, how? What is the evidence the president can fire his FBI director? What is the evidence that would take you to the point where you would actually be talking about, and Rod Rosenstein would be agreeing to, wearing a wire to talk to the president and then having a discussion, even if it went nowhere, of removing the president through the 25th Amendment? And I'm just going to go to the interview and then we'll part of the interview, not all the interview, but part of the interview here where he talks about what the justification is and then tear it apart. Because we said this on Thursday morning or Thursday night, Friday morning show. If Scott Pelley does not ask the ultimate question, which is, well, what's the crime?
Right. Where's the crime?
What's the allegation of the crime that the president committed? What was the actual crime that you need to begin with? You just don't sit there and say the president didn't like James Comey, or the president said the Russian investigation was a bunch of hacks or a witch hunt. That isn't enough to start a counterintelligence investigation or an investigation into the president or having any discussion on removing the president through the 25th Amendment, which has nothing to do with your political purposes or whether the president was even colluding with the Russians or not. That would be impeachment by Congress, not the 25th Amendment. Hmm. So what was your justification? What was he allegation? What did you know from your intelligence that the president did? Well, let's listen to it here. Here we go.
Right.
That's exactly McCabe right. says that the basis for both investigations was in Mr. Trump's own statements. First, Mr. Trump had asked FBI Director Comey to drop the investigation of National Security Advisor Michael Flynn, who has since pleaded guilty to lying to the FBI about his Russian contacts. Then, to justify firing Comey, Mr. Trump asked his Deputy Attorney General, Rod Rosenstein, to write a memo listing the reasons Comey had to go. And according to McCabe, Mr. Trump made a request for that memo that came as a surprise.
Rod was concerned by his interactions with the president, who seemed to be very focused on firing the director, and saying things like, make sure you put Russia in your memo. That's concerned Rod in the same way that it concerned me and the FBI investigators on the Russia case.
If Deputy Attorney General Rosenstein listed the Russia investigation in his memo to the White House, it could look like he was obstructing the Russia probe by suggesting Comey's firing. And by implication, it would give the president cover.
He didn't want to put Russia in his memo.
He did not. He explained to the president that he did not need Russia in his memo. And the president responded, I understand that. I'm asking you to put Russia in the memo anyway.
When the memo justifying Comey's firing was made public, Russia was not in it. But Mr. Trump made the connection anyway, telling NBC, then Russian diplomats, that the Russian investigation was among the reasons he fired Comey.
There were a number of things that caused us to believe that we had adequate predication or adequate reason and facts to open the investigation. The president had been speaking in a derogatory way about our investigative efforts for weeks, describing it as a witch hunt.
Russia is a ruse. I have nothing to do with Russia. Haven't made a phone call to Russia in years.
Publicly undermining the effort of the investigation. The president had gone to Jim Comey and specifically asked him to discontinue the investigation of Mike Flynn, which...
Okay, now he's repeating the same stuff over again.
Right.
What do you have there? He told James Comey not to to stop the investigation. Would he stop the investigation of Flynn? The FBI already knew Flynn had nothing. They knew Flynn, they knew, as you said in our pre-show meeting, they knew Flynn didn't collude with the Russians to hack the election. He had lied about a conversation that he had way after the election.
Yep. It was late December of 2016.
Right. They knew it. They had
they
nothing.
Knew there was nothing before he knew there
right.
was nothing.
They knew he had not, they knew they had nothing on him. Mm-hmm. Nothing.
Right.
So what did they have? Trump said, it's a witch hunt.
Yes.
And he said it's a witch hunt. Why? Because either one of two reasons. Either he was guilty of colluding with the Russians to hack the election, which was the narrative at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Or he was completely innocent and wanted the American public to know it. As you and I said, if we were investigators, the one thing that you would want if you didn't want to put suspicion on yourself, if you knew you were guilty of colluding with the Russians to hack the election, you'd be telling Rosenstein, don't put Russia in there as a reason. I don't need it, do I?
Right.
I don't want to give my enemies anything. So use everything except Russia, because I don't want to give my political enemies the ability to say, see, he put Russia in there. He's trying to obstruct justice. When Rosenstein said, you don't need to even put Russia in, and I won't even put Russia in. But since the president kept insisting on Russia, does that actually make the president look guilty? Or does it make it seem that he is so furious, I don't need this to fire Comey. You told me I don't need this to fire Comey, but I want it in there anyway. Our thing is, it shouldn't show you either way. The only point that should take you to as an investigator is two points, and we just brought up the two points.
either he's trying to hide something or he really does believe he's innocent and he's no contact with Russia. What's the evidence that we have got independently outside of what the president has said?
And through his 60 Minutes interview, McCabe is proving it was a witch hunt.
That's my point exactly.
What he is stating here is that because there really was nothing on Flynn, they knew there was nothing on Flynn. This discussion that he had with Comey on go easy on Flynn, the president didn't take action at all except for the firing of Comey, which was in his lawful right to do. Didn't impede the investigation at all. There was no attempt to destroy evidence or anything else. So what you're seeing here is when McCabe in this interview, when he's boasting about opening up the investigation on obstruction, it just shows you they had nothing. They had nothing on collusion. Now we believe we've got them on something. That's the witch hunt right there. I'm the one, he was boasting. I was the one that started the investigation on obstruction right after he fired my boss.
Yep.
I insisted on doing that. Well, wait a minute. Hold on. This whole thing was about collusion, right? Nope. The whole thing was about getting rid of a guy you didn't like. And it didn't matter.
Because
if one wasn't working, the other one would work.
Because he fired your guy.
Right.
You notice in this conversation, nothing is discussed about any evidence that the FBI had. Any evidence that the president colluded with Russia illegally to hack the 2016 election, which, remember, when this was going on in the middle of 2017, in May of 2017, that was the only thing that was being talked about, was that Trump colluded with the Russians to hack the election, which then morphed into hacking the DNC, which then morphed into, well, to change the outcome of the election. Where is the evidence? As I told, I don't know if I said this to you on the air or off the air, but I'll repeat it again. I'll probably repeat it again many times before. You and I both talked about earlier that Comey never seemed like he had an investigative mindset. His thought process to us and many others, even Democrats, with the whole Hillary thing, always seemed to be extremely odd.
Yes, right.
Same thing here with McCabe.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost as if they both don't have an investigative mind to look for the actual crime. They seem to be what? What does both Comey and McCabe seem to be? They seem to be bureaucrat politicians. Because they're not talking about crimes being committed here. They're talking about actions that they disliked and things that the president said that they disliked. But none of them gave evidence. None of them was the president stating, I colluded with the Russians to hack the election. The only way that you could take Trump's statement, and it seems like the biggest portion that McCabe is saying, is not even the Flynn firing, because they know that can be torn apart. There was nothing there. They were listening. They knew what the conversation was between the Russian ambassador and Flynn. They knew there was nothing there.
Mm-hmm.
There was no collusion. There was nothing. They knew they had nothing there. Why Flynn lied, I don't know to this day. I can't tell you.
Right.
But the FBI had nothing from the conversation. Otherwise, he would be up on other charges, and he is not. So they knew there was nothing there. So all they're saying is since Trump fired Comey and wanted Rosenstein to put it in his memo, that's it? Because all that shows is one of two things. It shows, you can say, it leads me to the point that I believe he must be trying to hide something, or he's not trying to hide anything and he's not guilty. Because if he doesn't need it in the memo, and Rosenstein is telling him you don't need it in the memo, then why would he bring it up and continually push that he wanted it in there? Because he believes in his heart
that it is a witch hunt and that Comey had told him three times you aren't under investigation, yet they were still keeping this going all the time, and he feels like he's a victim of a witch hunt.
And ultimately, the Russia thing didn't end up in the memo.
It didn't end up in the memo.
Right.
And Trump kept still saying that was part of the reason that he fired him, but it wasn't because he was trying to hide anything.
Right.
Because if you feel that would make Trump look guiltier, then that's the last thing that Trump would do.
Right. He'd be working to make sure the whole Russia thing does not end up in the memo.
Because you're trying to hide it.
Right.
You don't want it. I don't want one of the reasons. You'd be going to him saying, I don't want Russia's being one of the reasons that we're firing Cuomo. Comey.
Mm-hmm.
He might want Cuomo fired from CNN, but I don't know if he'd succeed at that. That'd be the first thing you'd say. I don't want that because the last thing you want, okay, Rosenstein, he told me he just made it suspicious when he, obviously because of everything Comey did, it made it suspicious when Trump said, no, I don't specifically want the Comey reason in there. You could have it whatever way you want. Mm-hmm. You could right. Move this thing around.
Right.
But Scott Pelley didn't. This is why I'll say, sorry, Scott Pelley, political hack. The two idiots overnight figured out the question you have to ask. Okay, besides what Trump said, what evidence did you have that he colluded with the Russians to hack the election?
Right. Where's that whole thing going?
Or did you just wish it was happening that way? And because Trump said things that you didn't like or you thought could move forward your political agenda, because there's no crime here. I don't see any crime. Show me where the crime is. You're saying that there's collusion or suspicion that Trump is trying to hide something, but you can't tell me what that something is. 866-90-RED-EYE.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. Now, he did say that Rod Rosenstein that really wanted to wear the wire. Rosenstein saying that's not the case, but McCabe saying yes, it is. So you're just wondering, is everybody trying to protect themselves now? Is that what's going on? Now you heard Rosenstein's going to be out in the next couple of weeks.
Right.
He's going to accelerate it. Will he start talking? Is everybody now trying to, you know, back off and say, look, I wasn't the mastermind of all of this? Is everybody now trying to jump ship and back off and try to defend their own position, even though I think McCabe did a terrible job of doing it? Is that going to be their attempt now? That would be the question that I would ask.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.